From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Florida dropped to 40th place in a ranking of states for overall child well-being in the latest Kids Count report from the Annie E. Casey Foundation. And despite improvements, Florida was one of the worst performing states when it comes to children's health care, coming in 47th place. And nearly a quarter of all Florida children are living below the poverty line. We'll take a closer look at the findings and policy recommendations for improving the lives of Florida children. Plus, we explore residential farming, including a South Florida couple's legal battle to grow food in their front yard, an innovative front yard garden program in Orlando, and the city of Fort Myers pilot program allowing people to own backyard hens. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Earlier this month, the case of a Miami Shores couple fighting to grow a vegetable garden in their front yard went before a judge in Florida's 11th Judicial Circuit. With a ruling expected in the coming weeks, we'll take a closer look at the case. We'll also explore the city of Fort Myers pilot program allowing residents to keep backyard hens and an innovative volunteer program based in Orlando, encouraging people to turn their front yards into productive farming operations. The benefits and battles over residential farming, that's coming up later this hour. But first, in this year's Kids Count report from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, Florida dropped to 40th place in a ranking of states when it comes to the overall well-being of children. Despite a 50% increase in the percentage of Florida children with health insurance since 2008, Florida was one of the worst performing states when it comes to children's health care, ranking 47th. The report also finds that nearly a quarter of Florida kids are living below the poverty level. The number hasn't changed much and stands slightly above the national average of 22%. The new data isn't all bad news, though. When it comes to education, Florida ranked 30th in the nation. With more fourth graders reading at grade level, more high school students graduating on time, and fewer instances of teen births, the rate of teens abusing drugs and alcohol is also down 14% since 2008. Joining me now for a closer look at what the report tells us and for policy recommendations for improving the welfare of children is Laura Speer. She's Associate Director for Policy Reform Advocacy at the Annie E. Casey Foundation, which is the nation's leading research nonprofit tracking the health and well-being of children and families. Speer is also a regular blogger on momsrising.org. Laura Speer, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
And we're also speaking with the CEO of the Children's Movement of Florida, Vance Alupis. Thanks for your time today as well.
Thank you so much, John.
I also invite listeners to join the conversation and connect with our guests with your comments and questions. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And Laura Speer, let's begin with you. First of all, tell us a bit about the aim of the annual Kids Count report. What key areas does the report focus on to, you know, gauge the overall welfare of children in a given state?
Thanks. I'm happy to do that. The Casey Foundation has been doing the Kids Count data book since 1990. So this is our 27th report that we have released, which focuses on child well-being and really lifts up the children's issues on a public agenda. That's why we do this every year. We think it's important to track the same measures over time. We think it's important to track measures that are not only important for the time of childhood, but really are measures that are in often ways have research that shows that they have a big effect on success as adults. So we look at data in this report starting with babies. We have some infant-focused indicators all the way up to young adulthood, and we look at indicators in the economic well-being domain, in education, in health, and in kind of looking at the state of families and the communities in which families live.
And where does this data come from that you use to, you know, evaluate states' rankings?
Well, because we're comparing states, we really need to find data sources that are collected in a comparable way. So we rely on the data that is collected by the federal statistical agencies, like the Census Bureau, like the vital records or birth certificates and death certificates, the National Center for Education Statistics, because each state collects data differently. We wouldn't be able to necessarily compare state to state if we were to use the state collected data. So it all comes from federal statistical agencies, and we don't do any of our own original data collection. We just take what's already been collected by the federal government and then compile it and rank states based on how they do on our 16 measures.
And to be clear, this year's data is primarily from 2014?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the most recent year that's available.
I would imagine that with 27 years of data now, it becomes even more valuable because you have, you know, the additional benefit of all this time to look back on and identify trends over a long period.
That's right, we do. And there have been some pretty major positive trends for our kids over the time that we've been doing the data book, for sure.
Can you maybe talk about what some of those have been, either at a state or national level?
Yeah. And so these, I think the even in this year's report, the trends that were most impactful and the things that really kind of jumped off the page at us at the national level were around the kind of the accomplishments of what is now being called Generation Z, which is the generation coming up after the millennials. And really, these are teens who are now in their teen years, graduating from high school, kind of just now entering college in the workforce. And they are truly breaking records on lots of different things that we measure. We have the lowest teen birth rate on record right now at the national level. It's been cut about in half since its peak in the late 90s. We have the highest percentage of young people graduating from high school than we've ever had before. And teens are less likely to use and abuse alcohol and drugs than they were in sort of the previous generation of teens. So these are young people, this generation of young people are really entering young adulthood with many assets. And I think what's especially important to note is that many of these teens, especially the children of color that are increasingly a part of our child population, grew up in poverty and grew up in a really tough time in terms of the economic situation. You know, we're talking about kids who are basically going into high school at the time of the recession. They're going into a really tough job market. They're going into, you know, young adulthood with an expectation that they're going to have to go to college or get additional training if they're going to want to get a job that's going to pay them enough to support themselves. So they're coming, you know, they've done everything we hoped they would do, and now they're coming, they're sort of going into young adulthood with quite a steep hill to climb.
Right. Looking at Florida specifically, you know, I mentioned Florida ranked 40th overall. That's down from 37th place from last year's report. You know, not necessarily asking you to go back to 1990, but in recent years past, has Florida tended to rank near the bottom?
Florida has been in the bottom half of states, certainly for the majority of the time that we have been doing the Kids Count data book, I'd say. And, you know, just kind of how the exact ranking has changed a little bit over time, but it's been around the low 30s, high 40s in terms of, you know, compared to the 50 states.
Okay. You know, I mentioned also Florida's experienced a 50% increase in the percentage of kids with health insurance since 2008. But this year it ranked 47th in the nation when it comes to children's health care. And I was just curious about how that would be possible. Is the state making gains, but just at a significantly lower rate than most other states?
Well, it's two things. First, the state started at a pretty significant deficit compared to other states in terms of, you know, we look back to 2008 especially, but in terms of children's health, children who are uninsured, the number and the percent of uninsured kids in the state. That's the first factor, which is a major thing. But also, every state has had in their uninsured child population over the last 6 years, which I think is especially impressive given the fact that employer-sponsored health insurance has declined. You know, fewer people had jobs as a result of the recession, and the jobs that they ended up getting after the recession were less likely to have health insurance coverage for them and their family. So it's really been about the public sector stepping up and really us as a community deciding that we wanted to make sure that all children had health insurance coverage and providing these kids with that opportunity.
And when it comes to, you know, this healthcare factor, you know, we have top performing states like Minnesota, Massachusetts, Iowa. Are there patterns we see in what they're doing that perhaps Florida hasn't done, say things like expanding access to Medicaid through the Affordable Care Act?
Certainly those things are important, and I will not go into, I mean, I think other the other folks on the call might know more about what's going on.
Sure.
Certainly know more about what's going on in Florida than I do, since I'm not there. But certainly having, you know, Medicaid expansion has been a key factor in terms of the states that have been the most successful in getting health insurance coverage for kids. It's important not only because it's something that the state can do and it helps the state to cover the expense of insuring its population, but also because it helps to ensure that parents get health insurance coverage, and therefore, we know that research is pretty clear that when parents get health insurance coverage, their kids are more likely to get it, even if the kids were, you know, eligible all along. So that's important. And I, you know, just in terms of the states that you mentioned specifically, certainly Minnesota, certainly Massachusetts has got the lowest uninsured rate in the country at 2%. Of children uninsured is tied with Vermont for having the lowest percent. And I'd say, you know, this has been a long-term focus in the state of Massachusetts, and there's a real commitment across the board to making sure that every child has access to health insurance in that state. And it shows in their numbers.
Vance, were you surprised by perhaps, you know, Florida's low markings when it comes to health care for kids?
You know, John, well, first of all, before I answer that, I just wanted to publicly thank Laura and Annie, Casey. It's in any work you do around these issues, it's important to understand the landscape and the environment, and Annie, Casey has done that for so many years. To be honest, I wasn't surprised. As Laura's mentioned, Florida began at a significant deficit, and we've made remarkable gains over the last few years, but still, the fact that we have somewhere close to 400,000 children in the state who don't have access to a pediatrician and are more than likely using the emergency room for primary care, to me is unconscionable. And one of the things I think so few people know is that in those 378,000, 275,000 of those children are fully eligible today to be signed up for Florida Kid Care. We just don't do a very good job as a state reaching out and enrolling those parents. So as a state, we need to figure out how do we implement good public policy to figure out how do we make it far more efficient and effective for parents to enroll their children in health insurance and get those fundamental basics that they need in the way of good health.
Vance, do you see that deficit in terms of reaching, you know, low-income families, just to let them know about the assistance or services that already exist? I mean, is that a problem kind of across the board here? I recently read a Sarasota Herald Tribune article suggesting that, part of the issue with low-income households in Florida is families simply not knowing about things like the earned income tax credit, which if you don't ask for it, you don't get it.
I think that's absolutely the case. And the reality is this, we make it very, very difficult for a lot of families and a lot of parents in the state to access resources that would allow them to make good decisions on behalf of their children. The resources are in almost every case there and available, but we create inefficiencies in the way that we connect with parents. One of the things that we're going to be pushing this year in the 2017 legislative session is to figure out how to connect the free and reduced lunch application for public school to the application for Florida Kid Care. The children eligible for free and reduced lunch are also going to be eligible for Kid Care, and every parent is going to be ensuring that their child has something to eat each day at school. Why are we not connecting that to the health insurance application and making sure that those children then have a relationship to the pediatrician?
Let's take a look at economic factors. You know, the report finds that Florida kids are more likely to be living in poverty than they were in 2008. Nearly one in four Florida children live below the poverty line, according to the report's data. And that's it's kind of on par with the national average, 22% compared to 24%. Laura, are these numbers surprising? You know, given, I mean, at least in Florida, we hear a lot about growth of jobs in the private sector and success of the economic recovery. But from this data, it doesn't look like it's quite having the impact on families with children that perhaps we'd like to have seen by now.
Well, certainly that's the case at the national level and in most states, which is that, yes, we are 6 or 7 years into the recovery at this point, or the recession is 6 or 7 years behind us, let me just put it that way. But we're not seeing, it's very clear in the data that that children and families, especially those in the lower part of the income brackets, have not recovered. That the child poverty rate has barely budged since it peaked during the recession, and that's the case in most states. We're just not seeing, even though we know the unemployment rate is much lower than it was, the official unemployment rate was much lower than it was in 2008, we're still seeing poverty rates across most states that are higher than the rate in 2008. And one other thing I would just mention about Florida, which actually was probably more surprising to me than it would be to you, either of you, is that, you know, we have a proxy in our economic well-being measures for cost of living, which is children living in households with a high housing cost burden.
Mm.
And in Florida, it's 41%, 1.7 million children who live in households where they're basically the families are paying too much for their housing, and it's negatively impacting their economic security. And even though it's gotten better in Florida since 2008, 41% is still higher than the national average. It's one of the states with the highest cost burden for families in terms of housing. And so, you know, I bring that up as it relates to poverty because, in truth, there's probably many more than 24% of children in the state of Florida who are struggling economically. That the poverty rate is a set rate, about $24,000 for a family of four across the whole country. And we know that's just $24,000 is just not enough in almost anywhere to raise a family, but especially in places like Florida where the cost of living is higher, it's a real underestimate of the number of children and families that are struggling.
And nationwide, is this, you know, percentage of kids living below the poverty level pretty comparable across the board, or is there a broad spectrum there?
There's a pretty wide variation in the percent of children living in poverty, and there's the state that has got the lowest child poverty rate is, there's a few states, 13% in Maryland, New Hampshire, Utah, and Wyoming. And the high is in the state of New Mexico, where 30% of children are living below the poverty line. So it's about three times as high in the highest state as it is in the lowest. But that's not that uncommon for the measures that we track. But it does, and you know, and the point I made about cost of living is important because that, you know, that's not factored in there at all. And when you actually take cost of living into consideration, California actually has the highest, basically, this is using the supplemental poverty measure that the Census Bureau did, California has the highest child poverty rate in the country using that new measure, which is more modern way to measure child poverty.
Okay. And Vance, the report ranks Florida 30th in the nation on education. As we mentioned, more high school students are graduating on time than they were in 2008. There's an increasing number of fourth graders that are found to be reading on grade level. Do you think Florida is improving education-wise despite spending less per student on education than the national average?
I think we have to be very careful with the words that we're choosing. You know, improvement suggests that we're really, you know, we're close to the promised land, and I think we're making progress. But to have 61% of our fourth graders not reading at proficiency, to me, is not the answer to having that 2030 workforce that we need as a state and as a country. And there's a direct correlation between those 61% of children who aren't reading at grade level at fourth grade and the 24% who are not graduating on time or graduating at all. We have to go significantly further than we've been, and we've made a lot of progress in Florida. We've had leadership from the top who have made education the key issue. But our organization, the Children's Movement, believes that public education reform cannot be addressed by injecting dollars into the third grade or the fifth grade or the seventh grade alone, that we need to figure out how to help children be prepared in the early childhood years and be ready for kindergarten once they get there. One of the things that the Kids Count report does not indicate or does not show is that in Florida, we have a third of all of our kindergartners who are getting to school not ready to be there. Mm. And the majority of these children never catch up. 9 out of every 10 children who start kindergarten behind will stay behind throughout their educational experience. So we need to do a better job of getting children off to a good start, and that's how I think we're really going to address these larger issues of third grade reading proficiency and high school graduation.
So I imagine the Children's Movement of Florida would very much be behind expanding access to pre-kindergarten programs.
So you may already know this. Florida is one of 3 states in the nation that has a universal pre-K program. Mm-hmm. Every 4-year-old in this state is entitled to what the constitutional amendment said is a high-quality early learning experience. The reality is that we now fund our universal pre-K program at a lower rate than we did a decade ago. So we have yet to achieve high quality for all children. And in my estimation, taxpayer dollars should not be spent on babysitting or daycare. We need to ensure that those dollars are being used wisely and that we're providing children with a high-quality program. But pre-K is not a silver bullet. It's not a panacea. We need to make sure that many of these children, and more specifically the children in the 24% who are living in poverty, that these children have a strong foundation going into pre-K. One of the statistics that I use most often, and I used it a couple of weeks ago when I was speaking at a Florida Chamber of Commerce event, is that children living in poverty by the age of 3 will have a vocabulary 1/4 that of their peers living in college-educated homes. So how can we expect these children to compete on the same level if 2 years before they ever meet their kindergarten teacher, there's already a deficiency of 75% in the total number of words that a child knows? So we need to do a better job as a state of getting children off to a good start in the early childhood years.
And, Laura, I had mentioned, more kids are, I'm jumping ahead here, we're going to early childhood, and now I'm talking about high school graduates, but more kids in Florida are graduating on time. But given that, not just here in Florida, but around the nation, the money available for need-based higher education is shrinking. So could that kind of be, it's great that kids are graduating on time, but then if they have these barriers to moving on, isn't that something else that needs to be addressed? Does the report talk about that?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And actually, we have a series of things that we recommend in our report. Most of the stuff that has already been mentioned. But one of the things that I think is really, really sort of, if we had to kind of gauge urgency, or something that's really come up in this year as, to me, the data points to this very issue, which is that these young people are coming out, more of them are graduating from high school, more of them are starting college. But at this point in time, if you are from a low-income family, the likelihood that you're going to graduate from college is not determined by your academic performance. It's determined by your income. And there's a real sort of tragedy there, just in terms of these young people who have worked so hard to get through high school and have generally been supported in lots of different ways by their communities. Once they get into the next place, which is needing to have that college degree or some sort of a certificate in order to get a job that's going to pay really almost above minimum wage at this point. There's a real urgency there in terms of increasing access to higher affordable ways for young people to get higher education so that they can eventually get a job that will support themselves and their families when they choose to have them.
And Vance, this report covers a variety of factors where legislative advocacy could come into play. Is that something the children's movement can get involved in?
Well, absolutely, John. And just so the listeners know, the children's movement is our state's largest advocacy organization, focused specifically on early childhood issues. We focus on high-quality early learning, making Florida the best state in the nation for young children when it comes to early learning, making sure that all children have access to a pediatrician and access to health insurance, and finding real ways to support parents. I don't think that we will make the progress that we need to make and continue to get out of this bottom quintile that Florida has been in for so long unless unless the masses insist upon it. We continue to live in a democracy, and it will be the people of Southwest Florida, Northwest Florida, coming together saying, these issues are a priority for us, these children are our future, and we need to invest more wisely in them.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the program, but thanks so much to my guest, Laura Speer. She's Associate Director of Policy Reform Advocacy with the Annie E. Casey Foundation. Great to speak with you.
Terrific to speak with you both. Thank you.
And Vance Elopas is CEO of the Children's Movement of Florida. Thanks for your time today as well.
Thank you so much, John. Real pleasure.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, we take a look at the benefits and legal battles over residential gardening and farming here in Florida, along with innovative projects to expand the number of urban growing operations. That's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida.